I was there on the last night of the Olympics when millions of Bogong moths filled the stadium. And when the flags were lowered, when the show was over, they flew away. It was magical. It was extraordinarily exhilarating. About 4 billion moths make the journey every spring from southern Queensland to the Snowy Mountains and to the Victorian Alps. Well, they used to, but in the spring of 2019, they didn't come, and they've barely appeared since. The decline of the Bogong moth, some say by 99.5%, has alarmed everyone, including local traditional owners who are working with the University of Melbourne to try to understand what's going on here. Matt Shanks is a Nirrabarluk man from the Tanarong Land and Waters Council, involved in this important work to track what his people call Debera, not Bogong, but Debera. And Matt, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, draw us a rough map of Tanarong country so we know where we are.
Sure thing. Tanarong country is roughly in central Victoria. So if you think about the Great Divide and the mountains of the Victorian Alpine region, we're to the west of that. We bound the southern boundary of the Great Divide and we travel across to the Campaspe River in the west.
So roughly speaking, it's sort of from Benalla in the east to Bendigo in the west, something like that?
Roughly speaking, yes.
But up into the mountains, and that's the point here, isn't it? That you are working with Melbourne University to try to work out what has happened to the moth you call Debera. What do those moths?
That's exactly right.
What do the moths mean to your people?
It's a big question to start, but they mean so many things. They were a source of food, I guess, first and foremost. In that kind of spring and summer season and to fatten us up to get us through to winter. But that migration of Bogong moths is an indicator for seasonal change, for our ceremonial and other obligations to country. And it indicates a time to meet with other nations in these areas where Bogong moth would be found in the summer periods for trade, for marriage, for dispute resolution, for ceremony and law. So they're a trigger for a whole bunch of things, and they serve a whole bunch of purposes for the Tanarong and for other nations in and around the Alps.
Because the nations converged on the mountains to eat, to dance, to meet. But have you ever eaten a Bogong, a Debera? Come on.
I have. A few of us have tried them, yeah.
Yes, and what? And what's the result?
Well, the flavour profile is a little bit damaged given the modern foods and sugars and salts and all of these sorts of things.
Sure.
But it's a nutty flavour.
They were extraordinarily easy to harvest, weren't they? Because there were thousands of them in every square metre of a cave.
Hundreds of thousands. That's right, and they'd be layered on top of each other. So if you saw a cave when Debera were in healthy numbers, it would look like the walls of the cave are breathing. It looks alive and slowly moving and pulsating. Yeah, it's a really beautiful sight.
And they fed not only people, but the whole region. I mean, they were food coming south to the mountains, were they not, for animals, birds, people?
That's exactly right. So mountain pygmy possum, which we've done some research in collaboration or supported research in collaboration with our monitoring for Bogong moths and mountain pygmy possum for bats of the alpine country. And then just that energy transfer provides, energy and food for plants. It feeds our soils and it travels down into our waterways. So yeah, it's an incredibly important resource and obviously cultural indicator as well.
And the disappearance of the Bogong moth, therefore, has a big impact.
That's right. And it's an impact that we need to do further study and research into to truly understand the extent of it, because it's not just Tanarong country. It's not just Victoria. It's right up and down the eastern seaboard.
Did they just sort of not appear in the spring of 2019, or were there signs that the population was crashing?
it's a great question. I think there's been fluctuations for some time with different kinds of disturbances, but it's exactly those kinds of questions that we're collaborating with partners to start to try and answer. Because it's unfortunately a lack of data that has meant a lack of action to support Debera.
What are the hypotheses at the moment to explain this extraordinary sort of sudden disappearance?
Well, it's multifaceted and complex, and that seems like a little bit of a castaway answer, but we've got to remember the range of bogong moth and the vast distances that they travel for such a tiny little insect. The impacts across all stages of life and across right up and down the eastern seaboard, across into, you know, western New South Wales and parts of South Australia as well. So when you consider different land uses, you know, there's considerations in and around light pollution, and then the changing climate and that really specific temperature range that they look for at that time of year when they aestivate in the high country is changing.
I take it that scientists have been to the ground where bogong hatch or emerge. Are they emerging in great numbers still, but not making the journey, or has the breeding stopped?
It's a great question that I unfortunately don't have the answer to. And one of the things that we've been thinking about as a community and led by our elders is conversations about how can we open up, you know, conversations and connection points and collaborations with traditional owners in other parts of the country that, you know, have responsibilities in those parts of country where they are hatching and in that larval stage, with landowners, with other universities and institutions and governments, so that we can really paint that accurate picture of what's happening and when, so that we can decide really clear and successful, you know, management plans and responses to the plight of Debera.
I'm surprised to hear that the work is only just beginning. Surely this is something, you know, surely this is something that has been apparent now for 4 or 5 years at least. This dramatic, beautiful thing has stopped. Is it only now that people are investigating it?
No, we've been involved in monitoring since the 21-22 season, and before that we were heavily involved in monitoring for mountain pygmy possum, and we started to notice some trends because pygmy possum's food source wasn't as prevalent then. So it was through that kind of project that our connections to the current research on Debera occurred. Yeah, but it's for such a tiny creature that occurs right at the very tops of, you know, the highest mountains in Victoria and Tunnerong country. They're not really places that people frequent, and so often we're not, you know, visiting those places, those caves or what have you. And so it's kind of few people that actually on the ground recognise that not as many bogong moths are arriving at that aestivation site. Of course, people have stories like yours and so many others with the Sydney Olympics of, you know, swarms of bogong moth or what have you. But it's a bit of a, in some regards, a distant sort of observation, I guess. Not many people have the privilege of seeing or having seen bogong moth in their caves, you know, resting. It's, yeah.
There will be some who are glad to see they've disappeared. Do you know that extraordinary story of Elton John being on a stage somewhere? And he was singing an encore and he swallowed a bogong moth. That was a remarkable moment. He stumbled off the stage coughing and refused to come back. And at the Olympics, Yvonne Kenny, the great soprano, was singing the Olympic hymn as the bogong moths came over. And one of them landed on her. And as a gift, a jeweler made her this beautiful bogong moth brooch, which she still wears always when she's giving, you know, it's a wonderful sort of memory of it. Didn't they set off the fire alarms in Canberra, in Parliament House, Canberra, at one stage? They were.
Well, that's one story that I haven't heard.
Yeah, they got into the works in Canberra at one point, and I think they had to evacuate the building or something remarkable. But how can you so regret the disappearance of what a lot of people found was a bit of a pest? Hey, Matt, how do these beasts, these little beasts, navigate their way from Queensland down to the mountains? They only live once, don't they? It's not as though they learn. How do they do it?
That's right. It is an incredibly fascinating story, and recent research has started to uncover some of the ways that they navigate. They are tiny, the size between a 5 and 10 cent coin and much, much lighter. So tiny little creatures, and they travel, you know, up to 1,000 meters above sea level, above the ground. You know, there's heavy winds blowing them around, and, you know, how could a creature like that possibly navigate? Well, what we're finding is that they navigate through observations of the Milky Way. So, you know, light using Earth's magnetic fields, and they're able to pinpoint these quite small, when you think of it in the grand scheme of things, elevation profiles that they require, which are often sort of upwards of 1,500 metres, 1,450 metres. There's not that many peaks that high in the high country that have, you know, the caves and the crags that provide the protection that they require also.
And somehow they managed to do this extraordinary journey, get there and breed in the mountains, I presume. Born in Queensland, breed in the mountains, then fly back.
Yeah.
Fly back, and that's their whole life.
That's right. And, you know, so many people don't understand, and we're uncovering that and telling that story at the moment, the true value that they bring. There's early research that might point to Debera's role, perhaps small, but in pollination in the high country.
Right.
They feed, you know, there's a story of dingo feeding on Debera when they're, you know, on the ground, and in, you know, you can rub your hand and there's handfuls of you know, Debera carcasses.
And aren't there old grinding stones that have been found with immensely old traces of moth on them?
There are. We've worked with local landholders and catchment management authorities, and have come across a grinding stone in the Central Highlands of Yeh, which, you know, only gets up to about an elevation of about 600, 700 metres at the highest point. Lots of granite, so lots of kind of likely candidate places for Bogong moth to be at in the right time. These grinding stones, we'd have them analysed for Bogong moth residue. So that tells us one of two things. Either we're carrying this huge stone up to the higher country to grind moths, or moths are much closer to that source. And so that's telling us that moths, you know, at different times and different sort of climate conditions were obviously lower, but also that the ceremony and, I guess, the harvest of Bogong moth has been a staple in our culture and our kind of cycles of ceremony and what have you, year on year, for tens of thousands of years.
Matt, thanks. Will you just bring them back for the lot of us? We miss them from the skies. I've been talking to Matt Shanks, Director of Cultural Land Management at the Tunnerong Land and Waters Council, about the fate of what he calls Debera, others call Bogong moths. Matt, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.